immortal words of Judy Brown. Happiness is a choice. Happy you're spending some time with me, Chip Brown, here on First Down with Chip Brown. I told you yesterday I would get you the skinny on Diego Pavia, the quarterback at Vanderbilt, as my co-host on Texas Sports Unfiltered from 1 to 3 weekdays, 2 to 4 on Mondays after the player and coaches' press conferences. Zay Collier calls him Diego Manziel Pavia because the guy looks up to Johnny Manziel. Like, that's his guy. And the more you look into Diego Pavia, you understand why. So this guy, of course, burst on the scene with his brothers, Roel and Javier, in the Vanderbilt win over Alabama. Diego Pavia was amazing in that game. You know, 16 of 20 passing, 252 yards through the air, 20 runs of 52 yards. I mean, 20 runs for 52 yards. And the guy just refused to get off the field. Vanderbilt held the ball for 42 minutes and 8 seconds. Alabama had the ball for 17 minutes and 52 seconds. That is not a typo. And that's when the world really got to see Diego. He's on the field, thanking God and dropping an F-bomb in the same, you know, on-field interview. His brothers are right there wearing, you know, golden black farmer jeans with no shirts on. Good-looking guys. His older brothers are Roel's 25, Javier's 24. And these guys love to work hard, play hard, compete hard, party hard. So everyone's wanting to know, like, where did this guy come from? Like, how has this guy just become a breakout star this year as a senior at Vanderbilt? Vanderbilt, which has now won 3 games in a row. It's got a loss that it shouldn't have. They lost to Georgia State, a team that is now 2-4. And they woulda, coulda, shoulda beaten Missouri in Columbia. They've lost their 2 games by a combined 7 points. 3 points against Mizzou, 4 points against Georgia State. So the win over Bama sent everyone scrambling to dig into Diego Pavia's past. You know, where did he come from? Well, first and foremost, he's from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and grew up the youngest boy of 3. And then Raul, Javier, and Diego have a younger sister. And she is a basketball star who's already gotten a scholarship offer from New Mexico, but grew up in a single parent household. Their mother, hardworking, obviously raising those kids on her own, often not eating so that her kids could eat. And she, you know, told the kids, if you want something, you work for it. Period. And so Diego watched his brothers and his brother Roel, the oldest brother, wrestled and played football at Briar Cliff, an NAIA school in Iowa. And Diego looked up to Roel, saw him as kind of the gold standard in the family. So he wrestled and played football. And, you know, his older brothers used to beat up on him, and then he started getting bigger and bigger, and he's a little thicker than his brothers, who are, you know, kind of wiry. And Diego is listed at 6 feet 207, but his high school coach says he's probably not a smidge over 5'10", just like Johnny Manziel. And I'm sure that's why, well, we'll get there. So Diego Pavia, as the quarterback of Volcano Vista High School in Albuquerque, he leads them to the state title game his senior year. And he is thinking, okay, I'm going to get scholarship offers. And then, you know, he wanted a scholarship offer from New Mexico, the school that right there in Albuquerque where he grew up. And they did not offer him. And so he's, you know, he doesn't have offers. So he goes to the New Mexico Military Institute, which is a junior college. He spends 2 years there and leads them to the JUCO National Championship. And this is where he gets on the radar of Jerry Kill and Tim Beck. Jerry Kill, who at the time was the head coach at New Mexico State, Tim Beck, the offensive coordinator, but not that Tim Beck, not the Tim Beck who was the OC at Texas. That Tim Beck is the head coach at Coastal Carolina. This Tim Beck is, you know, a sage veteran offensive coordinator, but they're sitting there watching the JUCO National Championship. It's the New Mexico Military Institute against Iowa Western. And Jerry Kill and Tim Beck were recruiting the Iowa Western quarterback. And they told Ralph Russo of The Athletic, we looked at ourselves midway through the game and said, we're recruiting the wrong guy. And so New Mexico State starts talking to Diego Pavia. And so they end up landing the kid. Now, there's a little nugget in here. When he left high school, his own high school coach said that Diego could have passed for Pauly D on Jersey Shore. You know, had his tips bleach blonde, necklaces, earrings, and he was a ringer for Jersey Shore, is what his own high school coach said. So he finds out later that New Mexico didn't recruit him because they thought he was arrogant and that the look was part of it. And Diego Pavia told Ralph Russo of The Athletic, they couldn't tell the difference between confidence and arrogance. He said, I'm confident. And maybe just a little bit. You got to have some swag. And so, you know, Diego wins the JUCO National Championship, and here comes Jerry Kill and Tim Beck. And Jerry Kill's a bit of a turnaround guru. This is the guy that was at Minnesota, kind of turned around in Minnesota, and then he had health issues and left. And that, I think, created the vacancy for the current head coach, who's PJ Fleck. So, you know, they're Jerry Kill and Tim Beck get him on campus, and Tim Beck is, you know, a bit of an option guy, and so they create this option offense, and suddenly New Mexico State starts taking off with Diego Pavia. They go 17-11 in two seasons, and go to bowl game, and suddenly New Mexico State is on the uptick. But last year they went to Auburn and beat Auburn 31-10 in Jordan-Hare. And Clark Lee, the Vanderbilt coach, was, you know, watching the game and decided to go to Las Cruces and talk to Tim Beck and said, what about coming to Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia? And so sure enough, Tim Beck, they offer him a job. He's like, let's do it. And Diego Pavia is on board. Going to play in the SEC. You're going to go from playing at New Mexico State. You're going to play in the SEC. And Jerry Kill had just retired, but they talked Jerry Kill into unretiring and going to Vanderbilt. So now you've got all three of them at Vanderbilt, and they even talked four other players or three other players from New Mexico State into going, including the backup quarterback, the heir apparent to Diego Pavia, Blaze Berlowitz. File that name in the back of your mind, because Texas will be playing Vanderbilt again next year, and it'll probably be Blaze Berlowitz at quarterback. Blaze is 6'3", 205 pounds, from Cushing, Oklahoma. They also convinced running back Moni Jones to transfer from New Mexico State, and Eli Stowers, who is Vanderbilt's tight end, who Diego Pavia battled to be the quarterback at New Mexico State. They did not like each other at first at all. And that, I think, lends itself again to Diego Pavia is a big, brash personality. Maybe everyone confuses his confidence for arrogance, but Eli Stowers sure did not care for Diego Pavia, according to Ralph Russo of The Athletic. And now they're roommates at Vanderbilt. And Stowers, who's 6'4", 235, is playing tight end at Vanderbilt. And of course, Diego won the quarterback job, and Eli Stowers moved to tight end, and now they work together. So it's this unbelievable story. And my man, Eric Henry of Horns 24/7, who covered the Group of Five for the last 5 years, did a really good interview with a couple of defensive coordinators who have faced Diego Pavia and the ways that they game planned for him. So get over to Horns 24/7 and check that out. But, you know, what you saw, what the world saw in the 40-35 historic upset of Alabama. Vanderbilt had been 0-60 against top five teams, and Alabama was number one at that time. And Alabama could not get Vanderbilt off the field, obviously. Vanderbilt held the ball for 42 minutes and 8 seconds. Let's not forget the 8 seconds. This is what they do. This is what Vanderbilt does with Diego Pavia. They run this option attack, based primarily off the zone read, but it is Diego Pavia's ability to take a broken play and turn it into a winning play, and that makes their offense so hard to defend, because there's the play and then there's the Diego Pavia improv, and he's not even as sudden as Johnny Manziel. But when you hear about, you know, the blonde frosted hair, the earrings, necklaces, and the love of, you know, having a celebration, if you will, you get why the Johnny Manziel love is there. And Diego Pavia wears number two. After the Alabama upset, he's, you know, he's on with Dan Patrick. He did an interview with ESPN, and he was introduced to Johnny Manziel and probably the most impressive thing was his brothers stayed in Vanderbilt and partied all weekend. They were there when the goalposts went into the river. I think they were partying all day Sunday while Diego was back getting ready for, you know, in meetings, getting ready for Kentucky, the next opponent. And then his brothers left on, you know, Monday, and Diego's hard at work on Kentucky. And then Kentucky's a 13.5 point favorite. The game is in Lexington, and Vanderbilt wins again, 20-13. And this time they kind of controlled the game. They were up 14-7 at halftime. They were up 17-7 after three quarters, and they win it 20-13. And they, you know, were outgained by Kentucky, but they held the ball for 9 more minutes than Kentucky. And it, you know, Kentucky didn't help itself. 12 penalties for 105 yards and 2 turnovers. And Pavia threw 1 interception, but Kentucky turned it over twice. So Vanderbilt won the they won the turnover battle, and Pavia was, you know, 15 of 18. So he only missed 3 passes. Now, one of them was an interception. He only threw for 143 yards, but he threw for 2 touchdowns. And then the other star of the running game for Vanderbilt is Cedric Alexander of Austin LBJ High School, who does just enough, it seems, to, you know, keep this Vanderbilt option attack going. He's a sophomore at Vanderbilt. He has not had a 100-yard rushing game. He's only averaging 4 yards a carry. But in the Vanderbilt offense, as Michael Taff said, a 4-yard gain on a running play is gold. Because if they can string 3 of those together, it's a first down, and they keep moving the chains. And that's what Cedric Alexander's role in this offense is. 5'9", 200 pounds. He's going to go grind and fall forward for, he's averaging right at 4 yards a carry. You know, against Alabama, he had 21 carries for 64 yards. That's only 3 yards a carry, but he had 2 touchdowns. And so Vanderbilt, they don't, you know, they can be explosive, but that's not who they are. I mean, the most explosive play in the Alabama game came on 4th and 1. You know, they threw a pass set up the final touchdown for them to go up 40-28. I mean, they didn't lay in the weeds. They went for it, and as they should. I mean, my goodness, you have absolutely nothing to lose. So of course you should go for it. And that's Diego Pavia's deal. And so, you know, they showed a lot of guts. They showed a lot of guts in that game. And, oh, sorry, the 4th and 1 touchdown pass to Junior Sherrill was for 36 yards, and it put Vanderbilt up 30-21. It was not the last score. Put him up 30-21 in that 40-35 game. And of course, Alabama's thinking they're gonna grind it with a running play on 4th and 1, and so Alabama's defense gets all bunched up, and Pavia throws a 36-yard deep ball for a touchdown on 4th and 1. So the moment's not too big for the guy, and the fact that he was a state champion level wrestler. Shows you how competitive he is, how he's always trying to problem solve. I mean, that's why you love wrestlers, because, you know, as offensive and defensive linemen, those guys are constantly trying to work leverage to their favor and problem solve in the clinch. And, you know, Diego Pavia is a 5'10", 200 pounder. He's thick and hard to bring down. And when he runs, you, as a tackler, you got to be careful, because if he slides, you can't, you know, try to hit him with a big tackle, a big blast. So he kind of works it to his advantage, because you need both arms to get this guy down if he doesn't slide. And so this is a fascinating matchup for Texas, because on paper, Vanderbilt is vulnerable in the secondary, and that's where Texas is strong. I mean, if we were having this conversation coming off the Michigan game, you'd be like, oh, okay, we'll just throw it. Just get that passing game working like Sark likes to do in the first half, soften them up, and then run it and grind clock in the second half. But we know from last week's game and the OU game that nothing was easy in the passing game. Both games, nothing was easy in the passing game. Not the deep ball, not the short ball, not the intermediate ball. There was about one good quarter of football from Quinn Ewers in the last eight. It was the third quarter against Georgia, after he'd been benched and came back in. He was 7 of 10 passing, 2 touchdowns in the third quarter, and got them back in the game. It was a 23-15 game. And so that leads me, you know, to this point about Quinn. He's had everything happen in terms of he got benched. He lost. People are questioning if he's the guy. Steve Sarkisian is saying he's my guy, but for how long? It shouldn't matter. What should be going on inside Quinn Ewers right now is the most focused and intense competitor being awakened. And Quinn Ewers should be on a mission. This week, the whole Longhorn team, but especially the offense, especially Quinn Ewers, because let's be honest, Steve Sarkisian recruits the highest level quarterbacks for a reason, because they have to manage this whole operation and be the leader and keep everything moving, get out of a bad play into a good play, understand what you're looking at from the defense, and then always have your eyes downfield and know where you're looking. Make sure you're scanning your progression so that you see the open guy. And that we have not seen that from Quinn Ewers. But if we don't see it this week, then there's much bigger problems, because everything has been challenged this week. And, you know, if you ask me, it all worked out for Steve Sarkisian. He put Arch Manning in. Arch Manning was okay. He had the 22 yard scramble. And, you know, I've said, if Steve Sarkisian really wanted to get back into that game, he would have inserted Arch Manning and run him like repeatedly, have him drop back and run quarterback draw until they stop it, until they come out of their blitzing and all their stuff. And he didn't do that. So it was like he wanted to wake Quinn up or give him that time to reset, was his words. But then Quinn went back in and he was better. You know, he was 7 of 10 and 2 touchdowns. He did play better after that. And the whole thing should be better this week. And Vanderbilt's going to blitz the crap out of him too. I mean, everyone's going to blitz him until he shows he can step up in the pocket, look comfortable, and beat you, burn you for bringing an extra man, burn you for bringing the man on the zone blitz and Ewers finding that gap and exploiting it. That just didn't happen. So it didn't stop. Kirby Smart said, keep it going. Keep bringing the heat. If the guy can't hit the fastball, keep bringing the fastball. And that's what they did. And it worked to perfection for Georgia. I'm sure they're talking in the locker room afterward, like, can you believe that? They could never adjust to our pressure. And that was fun. 7 sacks, 11 or 10 tackles for loss. I mean, hell yeah, it was fun. If you're playing defense for Georgia at Dalen Everett, who had the strip sack and the interception, oh man, you don't think he had all kinds of fun when he got back to Athens? I mean, guy was he and the punter, Rhett Forsen. Oh, sorry, Brett. I like Rhett better. Can we change it? Brett Thorson. As we said, if you got a punter with Thor in his name, you're doomed. And that dude, whoa. I've got a Ray Guy Award vote. And right now, Brett Thorson is my guy. 54-yard average on 4 punts, pinning Texas down around its 5 every time. Yeah. But if you're going to go after Vanderbilt, if you want to kind of push them around, get them off the field, get them out of their game, then you got to get at their secondary. They're 68th in passing yards allowed. They're giving up 215 yards passing per game, but they're 86th in team passing efficiency defense. And that to me is the better barometer of your pass defense because it incorporates a lot of other metrics like yards per catch and all kinds of stuff. So that's where you attack them because their run defense is not bad. They're only giving up 116.3 yards per game on the ground. They're 37th in run defense. So, I mean, by comparison, Texas's run defense, they're giving up 104.3 yards per game on the ground. They're 19th in FBS. And Vanderbilt's only giving up 116.3 on the ground. So 12 more yards per game is the difference between Texas and Vanderbilt's run defense. You'll take that. If you're Vanderbilt, you're happy with that. And that's Clark Lee's side of the ball. Vanderbilt giving up 22.1 points per game. I mean, if Vanderbilt's supposed to be the doormat of the SEC, these numbers are a lot better than half the SEC. Like Vanderbilt's number 25 in the country, and they're playing like it. Like they beat Alabama. Oh, they had been 0-60 against top 5 teams. Diego Pavia's brothers were the first ones to jump up on the goalposts and help tear it down. They dragged those goalposts all through Nashville, down Broadway to the river, and turn around and dominate Kentucky in Lexington. Texas goes to Lexington November. No, they're at home. Sorry. They're playing Kentucky at home on November 23rd between the Arkansas and Texas A&M road trips. They play Kentucky. So this is a legit opponent. This is a team that knows exactly who they are. And those are the ones you worry about the most. Because Texas, offensively, they want to run the ball. They want to be balanced, but we've all seen it. Texas throws to set up the run. Sark gets his elite players in space, his elite quarterback play usually finds those guys. They throw short, they throw medium, they throw long. and they get the pass defense all flummoxed, and they're getting defenders that they want in conflict. And that was the other thing that was really disappointing. Texas didn't get their matchups at all. I mean, not at all. And they didn't, I mean, the biggest matchup that they had and didn't capitalize on was the Quintrevion Weisner drop on third down with nothing between him and the goal line. So that could have changed the whole momentum of the game and gotten the offense some confidence. And especially if they score, Texas would have, you know, been throwing a punch first instead of taking five near knockout punches to fall behind 23 to nothing. Texas needs to be sharp in the passing game. It's that simple. And I think you gotta work the carries between Quintrevion Weisner and Jaden Blue, whether it's two series for Weisner, one for Blue, or every other series. But you gotta work both those guys and get them, you know, to where the defense isn't suspecting, oh, Jaden Blue's in, it's a pass. So in some ways, it shouldn't matter. I mean, if Jaden Blue goes out into the flat for a potential screen pass or goes down the line of scrimmage, that's the RPO game that Sark's so good at and usually getting defenders into conflict. And so that's what I'm looking for. I mean, my God, if we don't see the most inspired, determined, focused Texas football team on Saturday at 3:15 on SEC Network at Vanderbilt, then there might be bigger issues than just getting punched in the face by one of the best college football programs, or the best college football program in the last 3 years, Georgia. Losing to Georgia. There's no shame in losing to Georgia. It was extremely disappointing to see the way the offense operated in the first half, or failed to operate. And that's what had everyone so, about that game. Because Texas didn't look like a team that was prepared. Quarterback didn't look like he was prepared or could operate. You know, didn't step up in the pocket. Didn't look strong. Didn't look decisive. Didn't look like his eyes were in the right place. So now he knows. Now he knows. Now he knows. He knows his coach will definitely take him out. And that's a potential motivating factor this week. I mean, you know, Steve Sarkisian and Quinn Ewers have been around each other for a minute. And unless that injury is still bothering him, and I said yesterday, here's what I would say. You know, I'd sit both Quinn and Arch down and I'd say, okay, listen, I know what you both are capable of. And Quinn, I need to see it. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that you are more injured than you're telling me. And I'm going to sit you down and give you a chance to rest as we go into the bye week. You're still my guy. You're still the starter. But that's where we are. And let's go have a great week of practice. And then you don't say anything else. Everyone knows what's the deal. And that gives Quinn all week to get his fire going and come out at 3:15 in Nashville against Vanderbilt like the guy who carved up Michigan. Just went right down the field, converting third downs. 8 of 10 on third down in the first half. Got up 24-3. You get up 24-3 on Vanderbilt, and to them, now they're going to keep grinding and running. I mean, if they're only down 24-3 at halftime, they're going to keep doing what they do. And the defense can't slack. Something tells me Texas might not be up 24-3, but they very well could be at halftime. I mean, the point spread is 18, and I'm sure it's probably coming down. It opened at 18. It's probably coming down, right? We'll check on that. We'll check on that tomorrow. But we like to wrap things up around here with a Sean Adams thought for the day. Sean Adams, my man, my 7-year co-host on Austin Sports Talk Radio, my brother from another mother. He had a thought for the day that he would post at his Instagram. They're still up there. This Sean 1S. And this thought for the day comes from January 25th, 2017. It will never be perfect. Make it work. It will never be perfect. Make it work. Thanks, everybody, for listening to episode 42 of First Down with Chip Brown. Let's do it again tomorrow. Until then, as my man Sean would say, the dream is free. The hustle is sold separately. Go to work. Peace.